is brought to you by the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group in London, and with the kind permission of the Parkinson's UK charity. Welcome to Parkinson's Life Raft. Parkinson's Life Raft is designed to help you, whether you have Parkinson's or, like me, you care for someone who does. And whether you're having a good day or a bad one, we hope you'll feel connected to others who are in the same boat. Each podcast, we'll invite a person or some people to give us a different perspective on living with Parkinson's. My name's Vivian Goldstein, and I'm a member of the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group here in London. My husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's about 10 years ago. I then discovered this support group, and I've been an active member ever since. A few weeks ago, I was invited by Parkinson's UK to an event they were holding at the House of Lords, and of course I was delighted to accept. I was introduced to Rory Ketlin-Jones, famous for being part of the hugely successful podcast Movers and Shakers. Rory was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2018. He's a British journalist and a former BBC News technology correspondent. After working for the BBC for 40 years, Rory retired, in quotes, in October 2021. He is still a very busy man. He's written several books, including one about his mother. I told him that his podcast had totally overshadowed ours. He was very gracious, and he agreed to join me for a chat about his experience with Parkinson's, his piano lessons, and his rescue dog. Hello, Rory. How are you today?
I'm fine. I'm just back from my regular visit to the physio. I've cycled back through the rain. I've got a nervous dog, which you can't quite see sitting behind me, which I'm very focused on. But apart from that, I'm fine.
Do you ride with the dog or you walk?
The dog is a bit of an internet celebrity because she's never been out of our house in 6 months because she's a very, very timid rescue dog and is gradually being socialised. But it's a long, slow business.
All right. You're very brave taking on a rescue dog. Well done. Yeah. Well done. Well, it's really kind of you to come on my little tiny podcast when yours has reached billions of people and it's very successful, the Movers and Shakers. But I wanted to start at the beginning with you personally. When were you first aware or suspicious you had a problem, maybe?
Well, it was the summer of 2018. We were on holiday, my wife and I, in Italy, and she said to me, pick your feet up. She said, you're dragging your foot. I realised I was dragging my right foot a lot. And it was a bit of a mystery, really. And when I got back from the holiday, I went to see the very physio I've been to see this morning, actually, who used to treat me for running. I used to run a bit and crop myself rather frequently. And I rather assumed that I just cropped myself again. I'd had something called plantar fasciitis, so sort of a thing with a heel, yeah. And he made that better. But he looked at this and he didn't quite know what to do about it. I suspect that he suspected that it might be Parkinson's. But what he said was, I think you better go and see your GP. So I went, I eventually got a GP's appointment, and that was a bit inconclusive. And they said, well, we probably better send you to a neurologist. And that took another 4 months. And during that 4 months of waiting, I think things became a little clearer. For one thing, somebody wrote to the BBC, having seen me on air doing a live broadcast with my hand shaking. And then the neurologist wrote to the BBC and said, I ought to get that checked out because it could be a sign of Parkinson. So by the time the diagnosis came, which was January of the following year after the summer, where I'd first spotted the problem, I wasn't particularly surprised to hear that it was probably Parkinson's.
And so when you got the diagnosis with the neurologist, you weren't surprised, but still, how did you feel?
Everybody reacted in a different way. I was kind of, oh God, well, here we go again. The reason I wasn't perhaps as knocked down by it as some people are, completely understandably by their first diagnosis, is that quite a long time previously, sort of 15 years previous to that, I'd been diagnosed with something that I found a lot more frightening, which was a malignant melanoma behind my left eye cancer, effectively. And that I found terrifying. And I had treatment for it. I still have treatment for it. It's a sort of ongoing thing, but which is slightly faded in terms of concern. But so this, and I knew a bit about Parkinson's because my dad had it. This didn't seem as scary a diagnosis as that. So in some ways, it was a lot easier to deal with it. And the symptoms I had at that stage were not particularly troublesome or didn't appear to be. I had a lot of weakness. It wasn't just the draggy. I had a lot of weakness down my right side. So my right hand, which I write with, was not very good. And my typing, which has always been terrible, it got a lot slower. But apart from that, it didn't seem physically that it was particularly troublesome at that stage.
You say your dad had it. How old was your dad when he was diagnosed? Do you have any recollection?
Well, my dad was, he was still alive then, and he was in his late 80s, and it had been diagnosed, I think, when he was around 80. And again, one felt that it was, you know, just another darn thing. If you're old, you get things. And he was quite frail, poor old thing. And he'd had a very serious thing in his 70s, an aortic aneurysm, which had nearly killed him, and he'd recovered from that. So he'd recovered from that, and then a few years later he got Parkinson's. And as I say, it felt like the sort of stereotypical way it's portrayed as a disease of the elderly, as, you know, one of the things that you're quite likely to get, frankly.
Yeah, but you're not old. How old were you when you got diagnosed?
I was, I think it was just before my 61st birthday. Yeah, I was 60, about to turn 61.
This is interesting to me because my husband was exactly the same age and he had exactly the same thing as you, dragging the right foot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's just odd. It's the same age and the same symptom, but everyone gets it very, very differently. Yeah. How close are you with your family? Like when you went to the neurologist, did you take your wife with you
My wife came with me. And it wasn't a particularly great experience, that. It wasn't the consultant, it was registrar, who was a perfectly nice person, but perhaps didn't have the best of bedside manners. She just said rather dryly, oh, yes, you've got all the symptoms of Parkinsonism. I wasn't particularly cut up, but it didn't strike me as everyone's different. Maybe I found it equally off-putting if it had been, oh, God, this is terrible. I think she did say this is a progressive disease and there's no cure. So there we are then.
Fine, move on.
Yeah.
How was your wife? Did you warn her that you, or did you both?
My wife is a very no-nonsense kind of sensible person. And she had gone really through the mill with my eye cancer thing, where she said to me at one stage, you know, she was planning my funeral. So we both got, you know, very worried about that. And therefore this didn't seem, obviously not great, but, you know, we weren't emotional about it. We talked about how we'd tell the kids and it was all sort of okay.
Mm. How did you tell your children? Well,
just that they're grown up kids and one quite a lot older than the other. And they were obviously sympathetic, didn't really understand it much, but nobody made a big fuss. There was not a lot of howling and wailing.
Which is helpful.
From me.
Which is helpful. Helpful.
Yeah.
So 3, 4, 5 years on now, how are you managing your condition now?
Well, I'm on quite a lot of drugs. Every time they get changed, it seems to be more. So I now take 12 pills a day. And at first, everyone said, oh, you've got to take your pills on time because otherwise everything goes to pot. And I thought, I don't know what you're talking about because it didn't seem to make that much difference. My symptoms were not that bad. And just in the last year, I think my symptoms got a bit worse. And therefore, it becomes more important to me to remember to take my pills on time. I didn't really comprehend the whole concept of being on or off. I just thought I'm permanently slightly doddery. But now, particularly walking, I find that, you know, if I'm too far away from my last set of pills, I can find it a bit difficult. And typing, which has not got better, got worse, I can be so incredibly slow with that.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah, that really is. If you're a writer, which I am, I'm writing,
of course,
a book at the moment. That is very frustrating.
Have you found any dictating machines or?
Yeah, I use voice activation quite a lot. I use it for, well, I've even before I was diagnosed with Parkinson's, because I wasn't particularly good at transcribing things, I used a fantastic AI thing called Otter, where you feed in a recording and it transcribes it. You know, not always very accurately, but you've got it to go back and check on. And I use that. I also use it for sort of live interviews. You know, sometimes I record sessions like this and then I've got a recording and B, a transcript. And I sometimes pick up my phone and dictate an email rather than tap it out. It's easier than on a computer these days.
Of course.
I find that writing a book, it just doesn't work like that because you're continually writing and rewriting. And somehow that's not a spoken exercise.
No, it's so important to see the written word, isn't it? Yeah. And before you were diagnosed, were you a very active person? And has this, well, you said you cycled, which is wonderful.
Well, I only cycle a little bit.
I think you're very brave. Scares the living daylights out of me cycling in London.
Let's make clear, I'm a very occasional cyclist, not very good. I'm far more, I was about running. I've become far more about walking. I used to walk with our old dog that died every morning before 7. Mm. And the difficult thing with this new dog is that she won't come out for a walk. Will you, darling? Will you, darling? No, you won't. But I do try and hit my targets. I've got an Apple Watch, which sets me various targets. So I do that. I do Pilates on a Saturday morning. And I see a personal trainer who's an old friend called Wendy every Sunday, which is a bit of a laugh, really. She makes me wear pink boxing gloves and calls me a Muppet when I try to punch her. So that is slightly frivolous exercise, but it's exercise nonetheless.
But it's good. The boxing has a very good reputation for helping.
Yeah.
I suppose it's the coordination.
Coordination.
And I was reading that Arsenal Football Club are doing a Parkinson's walking for football, as in
a walking football. Yes, there is a whole thing which I sort of. Oh, maybe I could do that. Well, I used to love playing football when I was a kid, but I was terrible at it. I'm really not sporty at all. I've got the worst combination. I'm a great armchair sports person. I love watching just about any sport, but I'm terrible at all of them. Whereas my kids are both hopeless at sport and not at all interested, which is perhaps slightly more healthy. They used to wander through the sitting room where I was shouting at the television during the rugby or the football or whatever and say, "You're right, Dad." But walking football sounds about right for me.
We live in Fulham and I want Fulham Football Club to get something together and I'm busy trying to get a hold of a man I used to know there. When you've told your friends, like you seem a very easygoing person, but I've only met you for 5 seconds. Yeah. Have you found any of the difficulties physically that you have in everyday life, have you found them embarrassing or difficult to explain to people that you need this rather than that?
Not really. I mean, I tell you what's been a bit startling for me this year in particular. I said things have got slightly worse. I've done a couple of TV things and I've been filmed walking. And I looked back at that and thought, God, I'm walking like an old man. I'm sort of staggering along. I didn't realise that I looked that bad. Maybe it was, you know, because symptoms really respond to stress. So maybe I was stressed being filmed. But that was a bit sobering. But, you know, my friends are mainly of my vintage. And so, you know, nobody's going to complain that you're slightly doddery.
Quite.
I always joke, you know, if I buy you a pint, make sure I don't bring it back from the bar in my right hand, or does the other one get a half?
And it's so important to have humour about it, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
What have you learnt about yourself? What's occurred to you that, oh, I didn't realise I was like that?
I did have, for the first year, and I didn't realise it, I somehow didn't realise it at the time that it was connected. I did have depression. I just felt, you know, sluggish, a bit desperate all the time, difficult to get motivate oneself. And I've learned that I didn't know I had the capacity for depression. I've always been a fairly upbeat person. So that was kind of sobering.
Mm.
Although fortunately I pulled out of it. Somehow I pulled out of it just as we went into lockdown, where I had to, from working 5 days a week in the BBC offices, I was working 5 days a week from my loft, which became a sort of studio. The other thing is, one always thinks of oneself as 22, as young, and that has one self-image. And I'm afraid this thing does make you realise you are a bit old and crumbling. And also, which my wife sometimes reminds me of, a bit bad, can be a bit bad-tempered and impatient. I think that exacerbates it.
Yes, yes. I think what I've found is that all the bad bits are exacerbated, but as we get older, I think they probably are anyway.
There's always this thing about what is Parkinson's and what is just getting old. You know, everybody knows that older people sometimes get a bit short-tempered and crabby.
Are you aware, like in the middle of a conversation, you'll think, I'm not handling this as well as I would have done or could be handling it?
Well, sometimes I realise that I'm, you know, getting a bit stuck in my ways, or, you know, not so open-minded. But that again, I think that's just an age thing, or an Parkinson thing.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. Have you, so the boxing, have you taken up any hobbies or any interests since you've had Parkinson's, because you couldn't do what you used to do, so you've turned your mind to something else?
Well, apart from Pilates, I don't think I have. No, I have carried on doing things which I find fun. So I carried on baking. I'm a very keen baker, sourdough baker. Began podcasting, of course. I've continued having a piano lesson every Saturday, which I've had for something like 25 years. Having started from zero when my kids started learning the piano, I said I'd like to learn the piano too, and I kind of outlasted them in a way. Never got very good. But that has turned in, the weekly piano lesson has turned into one of my therapy sessions. I've got a lovely teacher who quite often we both want to just chat. And every now and then I say, shall I play a bit of piano? I say, oh, yes, it's good. And I think of it as therapy. And it's also, because it's become a bit more difficult to play with my right hand, I sort of see that as kind of a form of exercise as well.
Oh, definitely. As you were talking, I was thinking it's... Yeah. The dexterity, helps you do up your shirt. Constant, really. Yeah. Do you practice the piano?
I should practice the piano, and I never do. It's one of those, oh, it's Saturday morning's piano lesson. Quick, go and have a quick go.
See, yeah. We never change from the 8-year-old that we were.
No, exactly.
So tell me, how did you get together with all the other lot in the Movers and Shakers? How did it start?
It started with the judge. I got a call one day from Edward Sturton, the BBC broadcaster, very venerable BBC broadcaster, who I didn't really know. When I was at Cambridge, he was president of the union, and I was a little lad sitting there going, gosh, this guy's incredibly clever. And then I watched his career, which took off into the stratosphere, way beyond mine. And I didn't really know him. And he called me and he said, he knew I'd got Parkinson's because I'd been very out about it. And he said, listen, my great friend, Nick Mostyn, has just been diagnosed and is in a really bad way. Would you have a chat with him? And Nick Mostyn turned out to be a judge and Ed Sturton's oldest friend. And we met, the judge and I, in a pub in Chelsea near where he lives. And he turned out to be the most ebullient, upbeat chap. I mean, you can imagine. And yes, he had some fairly distressing symptoms. He was having terrible nightmares and rampaging around in the middle of the night. But he was and remained a very glass half full kind of chap. And we talked to meeting from time to time. And the second or third time we met, he said, do you mind if I bring Jeremy Paxman along? So I said, oh, all right. And again, Jeremy Paxman was, I'd worked on several of the same programs, but I'd always been, here am I, and here's the god Jeremy, and maybe raised an eyebrow in the corridor, but that was the only relationship we'd had. Anyway, Jeremy came along, turned out to have quite severe Parkinson's, and, you know, we three took to meeting in his local pub in Notting Hill. Then Jeremy, I think, introduced Paul Mayhew Archer, who is a lovely guy.
Yes.
Who's the comedy scriptwriter behind Vicar of Dibley and various things like that. And he's the complete opposite of Jeremy. He's even more upbeat than the judge. He's a very much glass half full chap.
He's glass three quarters full.
Yeah. Mark Mardell, I think I invited along, who is another BBC broadcaster who'd been diagnosed quite recently. And finally, and last but by no means least, Gillian Lacey-Solomar, who both Jeremy and I knew from way back when she used to be a BBC reporter before being an academic and businesswoman. She does all sorts of things now. And that was the six of us. And quite early on, the judge, even before there were six of us, when there were just four of us, said, I think we ought to write a book. And we all thought this was a terrible idea. He said it should be called Four Men in a Boat. For what reason, I don't know. And Jeremy Paxman said, that's the worst idea anybody's ever had, ever. And we kind of agreed. But the judge is not easy to put off. He said, OK, then a podcast. And we all said, I got involved in helping him think about a podcast. But he did all the work of making contacts, or most of it, because he's a brilliant guy at making contacts. Somehow his son knew people who were in podcasting, and we met a whole bunch of people in podcasting, and we talked about it and talked about it, and eventually we just decided to do it.
Yes.
And it was the sheer force of will of the judge, who had to get permission, by the way, from the Lord Chief Justice, that got it off the ground. And we said, oh, we'll do a pilot and see how it goes. We got a lovely young producer called Nick Hilton, who's a sort of one-man company that makes podcasts, and he said he'd help us, and he somehow recorded us in the back room of the pub, and we rambled for 45 minutes. I said quite early on, I was taking on the mantle of the serious practical person, whereas the judge was the creative and excitable person, which is kind of the opposite of what you'd imagine from a media person and a judge, but there we are. I said, I think we do need a bit of a script, and so we had a loose framework, but a lot of it was just rambling. But the brilliant Nick Hilton, our producer, managed to take our, you know, ramblings and cut them down and make it sound vaguely articulate. And we listened to it and thought, actually, that's not bad. And off we went.
Well, it's absolutely wonderful. And the camaraderie just pours through your listening machine. It's just, it's great. And how, I know you're on a summer break at the moment, but do you record it once a week?
No, the nightmare is, because it really is an anarchic collective. Nobody's quite in charge, although I suppose the judge and I do more of the organising. The nightmare is getting everybody together.
Yeah.
And we've actually recorded, we record every two or three weeks, but we record more than one episode at once.
Yes.
We record two and sometimes three episodes in an afternoon in the pub. And we've actually recorded... Series two starts in September. It's going to start with another idea of the judge, a live event in September, which we're recording in Middle Temple Hall. But we've recorded four other episodes. So we've got in the can, we will have by the evening of September the 6th, five episodes of series two. And we'll have to start cracking on then. So that'll take us into October, and we'll have to crack on and record some more.
Do you not get tired? Is it because lots of people find having Parkinson's quite draining? Is everyone able easily to?
That's interesting. I saw a friend of mine, another ex-BBC person, saying, and who's younger than me, saying, does anybody else get this thing where suddenly in the middle of the day they just absolutely poleaxed and have to sit down for half an hour, 45 minutes? And I thought, no, that never happens to me. And the next day, I don't know, it was an auto-suggestion. I suddenly felt pole accident soon after lunch. Well, for me, I mean, the extraordinary thing is I retired, took voluntary redundancy from the BBC, not because I was ill, but because they moved my job to Glasgow, which did not fit with my lifestyle, in November 2021. Without any regrets, I had a fantastic career there. And I had a few things lined up and was busy enough. Now I've got a ton going on. I've got a book coming out next month, as well as this podcast. I do a monthly podcast for my wife's Cambridge Institute. I do the odd column here. I do a bit of media training. And suddenly, I'm juggling. I am busy, but I quite like that.
I would have thought for anyone, if they have a lot on, it's always ask a busy person to do something, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a very good reason for getting up in the morning, which is important to everyone, especially if you're not very well. What's your book going to be called?
This is a real passion project. Comes out in September, and it's called Ruskin Park, Sylvia, Me and the BBC. And it's about my mother. So here's a brief potted history.
Yeah.
My mother joined the BBC as a married woman in 1941 in Bristol during the war and loved the BBC so much that she left her husband over it, who was unhappy with her having a job. She left him in 1947, came to London with my half-brother, the son she'd had already, worked in live BBC television drama, lived in circumstances of, you know, great poverty, really, in some horrible boarding house. Things were just about going right when she had an affair in the late 1950s with a much younger man who also worked in BBC television drama. And that man turned out to be my father, who I didn't meet until I was an adult. She brought me up on her own. But what makes this extraordinary, what makes the book, is that when she died, and this is quite some years ago, I found in the one-bedroom council flat where she lived and where I was brought up the most extraordinary collection of letters. She kept everything, 50 or 60 years worth of every letter she'd received, and many, many letters, copies of letters that she typed. She was a shorthand typist. And not just, you know, official sort of BBC letters, but she typed to her sisters and they were completely frank with what was going on in their lives, because her older sister was also a secretary and type. And they poured everything out. And they're so different from, people think that social media is full of people, you know, telling the truth about their lives, but it's not, it's all performative. Whereas two sisters telling each other, oh God, I'm pregnant, what shall I do? That yeah. kind of thing.
Yeah.
Was completely honest. Anyway, that is the book. It tells the story of a woman that I thought was slightly bonkers and really difficult as she grew older. We've been talking about what we're like as we're getting older. And what shined out of the letters was what a remarkable woman she was, because basically from 1947, when she left her husband and went off with her then 5-year-old son, my half brother, until I left home in sort of 1978, she was basically a single mother, coping in very straitened circumstances, but fighting for her right to work and to have a good life. And it just shines out of these letters.
How utterly wonderful. How absolutely wonderful. Such strength. Marvellous. Well, I look forward to reading it, actually. Your book's coming out in September, and it's called Sylvia, Me and the BBC, which has...
Ruskin Park.
Oh, sorry, Sylvia, Ruskin Park.
The BBC, yeah. Right. Ruskin Park House was the flat where I found all these letters and where I was brought up.
Let's finish this off. Have you got one thing you would like to tell people with Parkinson's or people without? One thing that you've found helpful, the way people react or that you do, just one little tip that might be of interest and help to others.
Well, I'm going to combine two great things that are really important, are shown to be important. One, exercise, you know, even if you don't feel it, get out there, keep moving. But the other thing is to find like-minded people. like, I mean, I've been lucky enough to do that. Have a bit of fun, share the odd joke about it. I mean, what we do on Movers and Shakers is I always say we're here for a bit of a laugh and a bit of a moan. And those are the essentials of life, if you ask me.
Thank you so much for sparing us your time, and thanks for explaining everything. And I really do look forward to your book, Ruskin Park, Sylvia, Me and the BBC. It sounds like a song. It's great.
Thank you very much. It's been great fun.
Thank you so much to Rory Kethlen-Jones. What a lovely, upbeat man. His new book, Ruskin Park, Sylvia, Me and the BBC, is out on the 7th of September. It sounds fascinating. And of course, the new season of Movers and Shakers podcast will also be out in September. So lots to look forward to from Rory and Co.
Please note that unless otherwise stated, the people speaking in this podcast are not experts. They are describing their personal experience of Parkinson's disease and ways they have personally found helpful in dealing with it. You must consult your own medical advisors before acting on any suggestions made in this podcast. This applies to experts as well as non-experts. Nothing in this podcast is to be treated as advice, and no liability whatsoever is accepted by the makers or participants for any steps taken in reliance on any part of its contents.